Hey now, welcome to the Dirty Side of the Track, America's leading Formula One podcast. I'm Brian, that's Rob. It's the off season, and we have cooked up something awesome for everybody today. Rob, how are you, man?
I'm good. I'm still in a little shock of like not looking at like the Sasquatch on the other side of Zoom. It's like, I know we don't put, now that YouTube have made it easy, I don't need to put the video up as often. We will return to video format at some point. We're not quite sure how yet, but for anyone that knows what Brian may have looked like a few weeks ago, there was hair as tall as the Eiffel Tower. There was his beard as big as Grizzly Adams. And today, I got to say, his head is probably about a third shorter than it was because all that hair up top's gone. And now he's clean shaven and I'm completely freaked out. But anyway,
I'm hoping it was heavy hair because I'm gonna weigh myself tomorrow and see if I lost any weight.
Heavy hair. Oh man. Well, Brian's being very gracious by saying we've cooked up. Actually, Brian spent many a late evening this week researching Alain Prost for a Vale's Tale. I feel bad calling it Vale's Tales because all I really did was format the notes so that I could read them.
No, they're still Vale's Tales. They're still always Vale's Tales.
You've done a sterling effort there. So not to be confused with Stirling Moss. So we're going to do news and social, Video Vault, which, by the way, I've watched the vast majority of them this week.
Oh, nice.
I needed something last night during the Packers game to keep me awake at halftime, so I kind of went into them there. So, and then Vale's Tale, Prost. So let's jump in to news and social, which has been quite active this week, and I've got a question for you, Brian.
Yes,
I'm going to read the first two, and I'm going to ask you if either or both, or neither, do you think the admins got excited and pressed publish too quickly? So, McLaren, out of nowhere, like, surprised everybody. I thought it was just me being really, really slow on the uptake, but then Matt and Totme dropped a reaction video on their P1 channel, and they were totally caught off guard by it, which is McLaren publishing their livery for the new season. We were joking that the launch dates, car launch dates that had come out, aren't really launch dates, they're livery reveal dates, because we don't see the actual car until testing. But out of nowhere, boom, new McLaren livery drops.
Like a month early, three weeks to a month early.
Yes. So does that mean they really are revealing their car when we get to reveal date? I doubt it. So hold that thought about the admin pushing publish too early. Second news story. AlphaTauri on their Instagram page, and I've just checked it. I still can't find them. It looks like they've gone missing. They changed their Instagram name to Visa Cash App Racing Bulls. Then the account has now disappeared again. So, question, Brian, on both of those, did AlphaTauri publish their new name too soon? Did McLaren accidentally mean to schedule that tweet for, say, 3 weeks' time and hit publish now? What do you think?
I think McLaren did it on purpose. I think it was great. I think they knew what they were doing. They deleted so much of their prior social media before that. So they had a plan, and it made sense. We'll talk. Can we talk for a second now before we get to AlphaTauri about the scheme? Because that was... It was one of the ones I think you thought was going to be good, right? Wasn't that your favorite one?
It's one that I said was going to be the best. Yeah. And as you text me, you said, now you've seen it. Is it still in for the running? I was like, well, actually, it is. Yeah. I like the fact they removed the token gesture blue from last year, which felt like they were trying to do some sort of little golf nod to golf, but it didn't really work. I didn't like that splash of blue. So now, and it feels like the papaya is slightly darker. So you've just, maybe that's just because it's just black, just papaya. It pops more as like a vibrant orange almost. Not saying it, my prediction is going to be true. There's still a lot of liveries that could, I'll be honest, if one of them is better, but it hasn't ruled itself out of the running. Let's put it that way.
I agree with you. I don't like the chrome numbers. Other than that, I actually liked it. I thought it was pretty good. I thought it was good. But like the chrome numbering on the back, I couldn't see it. I don't, maybe that's my partial color blindness, but I'm looking like, is that Oscar? Is that Lando? Whose number is that? And so anyway, that was my only challenge. With the chrome numbering. I liked it, though. And I like when they do that. So AlphaTauri, to your question, I actually think they did this on purpose. But here's my thing. I think this is like a kick-stake situation where they kind of pulled back after the reaction a little. And then they're like, hang on a second. People don't like this whole name we just put out there. V-Carb. AlphaTauri is going to be known. We may even have to revert to Toro Rosso. If they go with Visa Cash App Racing Bulls, I'm going back to Toro Rosso. Is that okay with
Toro
you?
Toro Rosso and Sauber. I'm saying we just lock that in now, right?
Agreed. Toro Rosso, Sauber.
But speaking of both those two, they were both intermingled in the next story as well, which is that Zak Brown has urged for immediate investigation into AlphaTauri because he's saying that the Red Bull No, I'm still going to call it AlphaTauri. I can't call it the other name. Red Bull and AlphaTauri are getting a little bit too cozy. We know they're a sister situation, but apparently a lot of the leadership has been revamped and it was all sharing. We heard that Christian Horner is going to sit across the two to some degree. AlphaTauri is going to take more customer parts from Red Bull, and it's going to up its presence at the Milton Keynes campus. And Brown has kind of basically said, AlphaTauri is, from what I understand, moving to the UK, which I think will benefit both teams. So this is an AB team and co-ownership, which is a whole other level of AB team than we've ever seen. And it's a big concern to ours for the health of the sport and the fairness of the sport.
Well, it is. Think of this for a second. I'm with Zach Brown. Again, this is the second time I've been with him recently. I can't remember the other one, which is very bizarre because I'm usually the opposite perspective of Zach Brown. He nailed it. It's not just the sharing of insight or common people. It's not Christian having a little oversight of both. It's none of that. It's not the drivers coming up through Toro Rosso into Red Bull. It's not that. It's the cost cap. You double your cost cap. Basically, give one team all of the money, and then just once it's developed, give the other team the parts. I mean, you see what I'm saying? I mean, you're just making four cars for the cost of two instead of, but it's money that other teams don't have. And so I know that's not how it's going to work per se, but what's to stop them? What would happen if AlphaTauri, Toro Rosso, VCarb, what if they said, all right, we're going to really focus on, spend all of our cost cut cap on engine and battery and brakes and everything, the chassis, but you guys do all the aero. Red Bull, you do. So you have double the budget.
Well, even if I'm sure there'll be the accountants will be getting ready to be unleashed and go zooming into Milton Keynes. So maybe that will be a bit harder to pull off. But Adrian Newey strolling through the Milton Keynes campus. Oh, where did I leave my genius insights to this year's aero package? Oh, I think I left my notes open back in that meeting I was just having with AlphaTauri. It's like Elf when they take the guy's notebook of stories, right? That's what's going to happen here. But
Can we just get an elf quote in here? I love it.
we did. I don't even know how, really, but there we are. I'm going to be talking of Elf, but I've got no link to Elf to the next one, so I won't. The times of the 24 races for this year have been announced. We're not going to go through them all, but the one that stuck out is that Vegas has retained its late night start time. So it's going to be another early one for me, 1 a.m. I think for
Yeah,
me,
midnight for
midnight for
me.
you. And really more it's the local people that have to kind of deal with that. It's cold. But me fans, the locals and the fans, because anywhere else where you or I have to get up early, it's because it's somewhere else on the other side of the globe. And for them it's normal time of day. Here
Right.
it's a bit, I heard a lot of people talking about how absolutely freezing it was when you were a fan to be sat there.
Well, I mean, as we said, it's nice to have a third American race, but that clearly wasn't for America. At that time zone. So that's okay. I did see a picture of the next one and you put it in the notes, but Carlos Sainz Sr., he won the Dakar 24, is that right? I know he won.
He
Did he
won
win a
one of the there's,
stage or?
there's a no he won he won I say the whole thing, but I don't really understand Dakar
I don't
because there's
either.
about 1,000 categories. So because there's like a motorbike category, and inside that there's about 400 different types of bike categories. So whatever category he entered into, he
Yeah.
won.
The senior Spanish category. I don't know. But congratulations, obviously, to Carlos Sainz Sr. He won something. And Carlos Jr. was there to congratulate him. And you saw this other part about Antonia being there, a guest of the show,
Oh
friend of
my
the pod.
gosh. Antonia Rankin, who came on this here little pokey pod, talk about people's trajectory going upwards after they've been on here, right? Like Blake was kind of trying to make YouTube content and now he's taken off. I see everyone who comes on here, they're just, I don't know why we don't, but anyone else does. But Antonia was covering the Dakar rally and she put on her Instagram feed picture of her in a helicopter chasing two of the rallying cars as they were going across the sand dunes. I mean, it was epic.
That's cool.
I mean, I'm not even a fan of that type of racing, but you just think, oh my gosh, I would love to be sat in that helicopter watching it, just chasing. It's like a Tom Cruise like stunt thing, like chasing
That's
these cars.
awesome.
It was amazing.
That's awesome.
Last one before we open up the video vault. Mercedes have announced one of their academy drivers for this year. So it's French sports car sensation Dorian Pin. Although I'm sure it's going to be Pin or Pin. I don't know. There'll be some French pronunciation there I'm murdering and butchering, but there we are. She's got quite a background.
Yes.
She joined the Iron Dames in 2021, finalist in the FIA Girls on Track Rising Stars competition. In her breakthrough season in 2022, she took a win in European Le Mans Series, also winning the Gold Cup class in Spa. Seems like she's absolutely been tearing it up, and she went on to drive the Prima in the LMP2 class alongside Daniil Kvyat. So good on her. I like to see these stories of kind of how the Academy is starting to get more coverage this year. And I think with it being on the actual same calendar as
Yeah.
F1 and actually being on TV, I really think it can take a jump this year.
I'm really looking forward to it as one of the support races for, as they call them, the other categories of F1. I'm looking forward to that a ton. And by the way, Iron Dames, if you guys aren't all following them on social and watching them race, you should. I got into watching them at Le Mans last year, and I couldn't have cheered harder for a team. And they were so likable and fun, and they went into the garage. Or as Rob would say, garage, and had some conversations. And the Iron Dames, man, they swear like sailors. And I thought that was awesome too, because I'm like, yeah, they're exactly the same as everybody else driving cars, which is perfect. Okay, with the news done, we're gonna open the video vault, and you're gonna notice a theme a little bit to the vault this week. It's gonna lead us into our Veil's Tales this week. So first, a couple that are unrelated. F1 wins, but from increasingly further back on the grid. It's 13 minutes. It's on the F1 channel. I've watched this a couple times, and they have to select a win from further back. It's not like they show all of them from first, all of them from second. But this was awesome. Like, I really enjoyed this kind of retrospective on where people had won from, and I enjoyed watching people win from like 22nd, which was cool. And then the second one that I'll highlight that's not related to Alan Prost. 20 times, Kimi Räikkönen pulled off an epic overtake on the F1 channel, nearly 8 minutes long. These were both dropped this week. That's why they're fresh. The Kimi one was so good. I loved watching him just. It's almost like he had at many times, and I remember a couple of them in the last few years, where he would just like. Watch everyone in a train, and he goes, "Well, I can go faster than this," and then go down the inside into a corner, passing five people in a row. And everyone's like, "Well, what's Kimi doing?" And I'm like, "Well, he's beating everybody." Did you see either of those, Rob, or no?
No, I didn't see either of these two. I watched all the next three that you're about to
All right.
showcase. I thought I better had to, given what we're about to talk about today.
Well, and interestingly, so when we put together our story that we're going to tell here. All three of these, or really two of them at least, should go watch these because they kind of talk about some of these moments, but in video form for your eyes. And so, top 10 moments of Ayrton Senna and Alan Prost's rivalry, F1 Channel, 8.5 minutes. This is obviously old. You'll hear us talk about a few of them here, but seeing it is so intense. I think you'll enjoy the stories, but definitely go check out the Senna-Prost rivalry. It is one of the greatest in the history of F1. And then, top
And
10.
is it this one? I think it's this one. It's this one where we get name checked.
Yes, correct. The dirty side of the track. I was watching it again last night. That is that one.
Although I think they could have done a better job of like there were so many flashpoints in these two, and we're going to talk about it a lot in a minute. But the video is a little bit too like lighthearted. Like the voiceover guy has no intensity whatsoever. So anyway.
And then they run each other off the track, and like it's like fine to the voiceover guy. But anyway, top 10 moments of Alain Prost brilliance on the F1 channel, nearly 16 minutes. Not enough views on that. It's in the couple hundred thousand. It should be in the millions. It is such a good episode. You guys got to go check it out. And then the last one is I was Googling around Tuned 50, Episode 5, the Alain Prost story on the McLaren channel, where it's a cartoon. Yeah, give it a check out. It's fine. Please watch. I enjoyed it. It was different.
Yeah, it's different. I'll give you that. It's different. Yeah, I'm gonna leave it at that. It's different.
Different it is. And we will close the video vault with that thought of Alain Prost. So I gotta be honest here. I knew of Prost, right? Before we started this, of course. I didn't watch him. I wasn't into it yet. We kind of he was closing his career as I was starting my F1 fandom. So I knew of him. I knew he was good. I'd heard he was a little difficult to work with. And that was really all I knew. Like, he was good, he was a champ, and I knew, of course, about his rivalry with Senna and the time around with Piquet And Nigel, like, but that was it, like a loose association. So I did not know the rest of what we're about to get into. And I really enjoyed learning about Alan Prost. So, Rob, how about you? Like, what did you walk in with in terms of Prost knowledge?
Probably more than you, because I was getting into Formula One late 80s. So when watching some of those, I think it was the 10 Moments of Prost Brilliance video, I was like, I'm watching some of those and going, I actually, could be fooling my memory that I remember some of these things, but specifically Murray Walker commentate on some of the moves and some of the incidents that happened. I was like, I don't remember that. Like, there was one on there where it shows, I can't remember which of the videos, but it shows, I think it's Suzuka, where Mansell crashes out real badly. Obviously, it's not focusing on that. It's focusing on what Prost went on to do in that race. But I was like, oh, I remember Mansell crashing. So, probably more than you. But I didn't, I'll be brutally honest, because kind of in the UK, Mansell had captured the public attention, and if it wasn't Mansell, it was probably Senna that you were looking at coming. I knew of Prost, and I knew that he was good and he won, but for some reason it just didn't figure on my radar to really pay that too much attention to him. Maybe it's because there's a little bit of history between the British and the French, and this like stroppy Frenchman, so I was mesmerized by the Brazilian Senna and Mansell and his big mustache. So well, I actually really enjoyed like jumping into all the stuff that you pulled together and kind of reading through it. I was like, oh yeah, that's that. He's a lot better than I actually gave him credit for.
The SAP stats are crazy on this one. So we will get there.
You did this. So why don't you lead us off into the Veil's Tales of Monsieur Prost?
I shall do so. So Alain Marie Pascal Prost, born 24 February 1955 in France of Armenian descent. He was an active and athletic child. And I put all these things in here for a reason. He enjoyed diverse sports, wrestling, roller skating, football, or soccer. And in doing so, he broke his nose several times. Well, there's checkbox.
Never noticed
one.
That, would you?
Never noticed his big broken nose in the past. But so that answers that. And one of the things we always do here is try to figure out how people got started in F1, or in for us in their F1 fandom. And so he kind of got into kart racing when he was 14 on a family holiday, Alan did. And he really enjoyed it. And he kind of followed through on this. That would have been about 69 or 70. So for 4 years, he kind of was into karting. But then it became serious in 74 when he was 19. He left school to become a full-time racer, supporting himself by tuning engines and becoming a kart distributor. I love this. I love when people who become, you know, pretty intense world champions have that tuning of engines or working on cars where they kind of learn a little bit of the pieces. And again, on karts, a little different than later, but still, he kind of came up through a little bit of that aspect.
But I like it when you get, I can't even remember which Veil's Tale and which driver now. This shows how much things stick in my memory. But when you talk about people that kind of funded their own way as well, by hook or by crook, they kind of worked on things, sold things. They were going to make their way into the sport, even though it was so expensive to get into.
That's awesome.
So
that's awesome.
I like that. So, so he kind of took to it like the proverbial duck to water and won the 1975 senior karting championship. So a category in which he won the title in all but one race in 76. So kind of came along, got involved, tuned them up for a bit, kind of took it as a hobby, went in full time, boom, nominated.
He did. And so he won the French and European F3 championships in 79. And at this point, he became a name that people were looking for. And McLaren is where he decided to sign when they had a conversation. But as with a lot of drivers, they have nicknames. And so Alan Prost's nickname has been the Professor, which I also did not know. He did not care for the name. It was kind of given to him as he had like a smooth, thoughtful, intellectual approach to competition. And it was interesting because when McLaren said to him, hey, do you want to go 1979, end of the season, before you start full time, run a race at Watkins Glen? And he said, nah. I want them to understand I don't want to make a mistake in the cart. I don't know Watkins Glen. I don't know the car. It'd be better to get an organized test together. So I'll pass on running a race at Watkins Glen. Hence, the Professor was born.
Yeah, I mean, it's nuts, isn't it? Because you would have thought he would have been champion at the bit to get into the car. Any race experience is good experience. So screw it. I'll just go and jump in and kind of throw it around Watkins Glen and see what happens. He's like, and he's so already so studious in kind of every kind of his approach to racing. It's like, no, it's going to be my more pragmatic sense to kind of have a test in the car first before I think about go racing it. Okay.
So he eventually did. And in 1980, he launched his McLaren F1 career. Alongside teammate John Watson. On his debut in Buenos Aires, Argentina, he finished in sixth place, earning a point. And I said at this point, well, that's amazing. Let's learn more about this inaugural season, inaugural race. Was time in Argentina? How many other people have scored a point in their inaugural race? And so I did some research, and it turns out the number is quite long. So it's not quite as impressive as I thought. I'm just being honest. I thought it was going to be real short. It's 67 drivers have scored a point on their inaugural race. And points, again, as we've said many times, have changed over the years. You had to be in different positions to get a point. And so anyway, 67. So it's not a special stat, but it's still an accomplishment for Alain. He had 4 point scores in 1980, finished 15th or 16th. There's a little debate on that, depending on the source, but let's just agree it's far down the championship. It was by far his worst season in F1. He learned a ton in that season. He also had a lot of accidents, broke a wrist, had a concussion, had mechanical failures. And interestingly, this is the beginning of seeing Alain Prost not play well with others in the sandbox. So at this point, he kind of says, he's easily annoyed. He had 2 years remaining on his McLaren contract. He's through the first season. And he's like, you know, I'm done. I'm going to leave McLaren and sign with Renault. Now, Renault obviously is a French team, so there's something to be said for that. But Prost has said that he left the team because of the large number of breakages of the car. And he felt the team blamed him for some of the accidents that he had. This will not be the first time he feels people are saying things about him behind his back. Again, that all was this a theme. Is fascinating.
That,
yeah,
I know this is a theme that I mean, you kind of always had this view of him as, I wouldn't even say fiery Frenchman, because even his interviews, he never seemed that fiery. No, it was more just kind of like simmering, a bit like Niki Lauda always used to look. Like, you couldn't imagine Lauda getting angry at anybody, but you knew kind of beneath those eyes, he was kind of simmering and plotting revenge on.
Well said.
Like Prost had that same kind of air about him that he was very. Ever see or saw him? Like, obviously, we didn't get to see them on TV as much as we do these days, like cool down rooms and all that kind of stuff. So, from what I remember seeing of him and some of those videos that you had in the vault, he's kind of quite reserved, but yeah. I'm going to say scheming, constantly scheming.
The professor
was scheming.
Exactly. So, let's just kick off Renault. I'll do 81 here, and then if you want to take it at whatever you want. But so he goes to Renault. He partners with fellow Frenchman René Arnoux, 1981. And A, just for everyone's benefit, it was a double Frenchman driving for a French team. Kind of reminds me of Alpine today in that regard. And so there were problems between Prost and Arnoux from the start of the season. And part of that being Prost was quicker than his more experienced and established and the team's already driving teammate of Arnoux. Prost got his first podium at Buenos Aires. He did not finish the next four races, but then he went to his first Formula One race, at a home race in Dijon. He finished 2 seconds ahead of his old teammate, John Watson. He won again after that win in Holland and Italy. Finished fifth in his second full season at a team he just moved to, where he wasn't the incumbent driver but took that title of the main driver. Finished fifth in the Drivers' Championships. And it was only 7 points behind the final champion, Nelson Piquet. Again, the points were much different then. So it wasn't as large a gap in Delta, and there weren't as many points available. But still, that is amazing. What a season that Prost had here. And it's kind of at this point, as we said, where there was the beginning of the rift, where Arnoux is like, wait, hang on a second. I thought this was my team. I thought I was
better. Yeah, and like 82 has got a nice little crossover when we did the delving down the decades last week or the week before we did it, because we covered this first piece from the kind of the opposite angle, which is about how I think we're talking about FIA and Bernie Eccleston and the big clash that came about, because Prost won the first two Grand Prix of 82 in South Africa. He lost a wheel and recovered. Lose a wheel? Yeah, whatever. Stick another one on. I'll go win the race anyway. Won in Brazil. And then he finished third. This is the one we talked about last week, but Piquet and Rosberg got disqualified after the race, and it was kind of the start of that whole kind of tension. He retired from 7 races and improved on his drivers' championship, finishing fourth, but with fewer points. And this is kind of the difference as well, I think, is that if you retired from 7 races now, I'm not quite sure you fall so far behind maybe, but, but yeah, so then the French Grand Prix that year... Arnoux won the race, but Prost, in his resentful way, felt that he'd gone back on a pre-race agreement to support Prost during the race. The thing was that Arnoux was kind of a bit more outgoing, and the French fans and the French media liked him. So while he wasn't the quicker driver and he wasn't the better driver, he got the media and the fans on his side. And Prost's relationship with the media was just poor. And he commented, say, when I went to Renault, the journalists wrote good things about me, but by 1982, I'd become the bad guy. I think, to be honest, I'd made the mistake of winning. The French really don't like winners.
This is so great. He's just pissing people off in his nonchalant way. Yeah, 82. What a season. So like you said, he finished well. He improved on his position finishing fourth, but the Arnaud thing was falling apart fast. And this is one of the videos in the one that we recommend in the Alain Prost, not the one against Senna, but it's in there with Arnaud with the conversation on who actually was supposed to, sit behind each other. Fascinating thing. In 83, Arnaud leaves Renault, effectively chased away by Alain Prost, which further pissed off French fans. So at this point, he's been annoyed with McLaren. He does not like his contemporary René Arnoux, nor the media, or really at this point, the fans don't like him. And so Eddie Cheever, American Eddie Cheever, I remember that name, replaced him as Prost's partner. And apparently there was a rumor that Renault decided they wanted to sell more road cars in North America, which, shocking, did not work because I don't think I've ever seen a Renault here in America. I have, just very few. So Prost had in 83 had four victories for Renault and finished second in the Drivers' Championship. 2 points, 2 points only behind Nelson Piquet. So again, we're seeing his progression up the ladder each season, doing better. And again, Alain felt the team had been too conservative in developing the car. He was at odds with Renault's management, and they kind of made each other the scapegoat for failing to win the championship. Was it Prost and his driving, or was it Renault's management? And so
It's
Renault,
okay. It's okay because I'm sure with an easygoing way that he is, they smooth it over, right, Brian? Tell me they smooth it over and have a long, fruitful relationship
Well, as
together,
soon
right?
as the South African race ended, Renault fired Prost.
Ah.
And so Prost, what am I going to do? He somehow convinces McLaren to take him back. I think his fifth, fourth, and second in the Drivers' Championships probably helped. And so within days, and he was moving his family back to Switzerland because moves to his family home to Switzerland because the Renault factory workers had burned a car or two of Alain Prost's. They burned his car. So add Renault and
Must
the
have really
factory
so.
workers to the thing. This is great.
What I want to kind of like use this to point out. When I read this through the notes, I was like, okay, this isn't just he's a bit difficult to get on with, and there's a little bit of a rift in the relationship, and everyone's happier that he's moved on to McLaren now. You really, really got to have got on someone's skin that they actually want to set fire to your car.
It's
It's
unbelievable.
like they it's not that they put a kick me sign on his back and spent the day
No,
laughing at him around the office on
they
his
didn't even
final day.
like deflate the tire or pop, poke a hole in the tire. They burnt the car. Oh boy. So as we said, he
Oh,
rejoins McLaren, and again, you gotta appreciate he joins Niki Lauda at McLaren, and this time McLaren's being run by Ron Dennis, who we've all heard of. Ron Dennis wasn't running McLaren the first time around in 1980. And so he lost the world championship to Lauda in the final race of the season in Portugal by half a point, but he'd won seven races to Lauda's five, including that Portugal win. But again, we're going to come down, I think it's 88, with the whole weirdo point situation that we talked about
yeah.
last week.
We
So
talked about that last
we'll get
week,
to
yeah.
that. We'll get to that. But he had seven wins in 1984, which equaled the record set by Jim Clark in 63. So while he finished second again, he was runner-up to Niki Lauda. We've talked about Nelson Piquet. Soon we'll be talking about Senna. These are some seriously amazing drivers. This was a great era of amazing drivers. Now, Niki was on the tail end of his career at this point, but just wow when you think about it. And Prost is right there, and he's like, I deserve this, and he does, because in 1985 he became the first French Formula One world champion. He won five of the races that season, so not as many wins as the year prior. But he became the first French F1 world champion in 1985 running for McLaren. So now he is at the pinnacle, at the top. You would think maybe the professor will be like, all right, I got this. I don't need to be such a kind of guy anymore. It feels like Max has mellowed a little bit after his win. Well, that's not the way Alain does it.
Yeah, so 86 saw Lauda had retired, and Keke Rosberg came along and joined him. Prost successfully defended the title despite struggling against Honda-powered Williams, Piquet and Mansell. We definitely touched that last week
Yeah.
as this kind of the surge of Williams came through. There was a whole this whole piece, I think, is on the video. The end of the 86 season. So Prost appeared to finish second in the championship behind Mansell. Prost has got the same number of wins as Piquet, but he'd got 4 second places to Piquet's three, thus placing second. He was second going into the final race. He was running third behind Piquet, directly behind Prost on the road, which is all he needed to do to win the title. And Mansell's tires just went kaboomski.
I remember that
And
video of
you'll
it just
see it if you
flying around,
if it's
yeah.
like. It's like we don't see them as often these days, but this is like full-on delamination. The tire has ordered a taxi and got the
Explosion.
hell off that rim in spectacular fashion.
Yes.
The Williams team brought Piquet in to change tires as safety precaution. Prost had already pitted and he's on softs, and he just absolutely nailed it. And they do go into detail here on the video, so make sure you go and watch the videos that Brian highlighted in the video vault, because it kind of goes through the whole mental arithmetic of that one. But doing so, he became the first driver to retain the title since Jack Brabham in 1960. That's quite
Wow.
a gap, isn't there, of drivers there? We were in 1986 here, and we're
Yeah.
looking 26 years earlier that somebody had actually retained it. In my head, someone like Lauda must have done it, or somebody must have done it like more recently than that. But no, apparently not.
Well, then Rosberg retires in 87, before the 87 season, and they put Stefan Johansson in the McLaren seat alongside Prost for the 87 season. He finished fourth, Prost did, in the championship behind Piquet, Mansell, and Lotus driver Ayrton Senna. So Prost finished 30 points behind Piquet, so it wasn't as close, other than his debut season in 80. And this was the furthest away he would be from the championship for a while. But here, now, it gets ready. Get your boots on. It's getting deep, because in 1988 it really gets amped up. So Piquet, as we already said, won in 87, and Williams won the constructors. Honda decided not to supply the Williams team with their engines, reportedly due to Williams' refusal to dump Nigel Mansell and hire a Japanese driver. So instead, they supplied the McLaren team in 88 with their engines, these Honda engines. Prost had convinced Ron Dennis, his boss, to sign Senna to a 3-year contract. Senna, who had finished just ahead of him the year prior in the championship, signed him to a 3-year contract. And apparently Honda had a little bit to do with this, because his ability had been highly regarded by the Japanese firm when driving their engines with Lotus. So they continued this association in 88. It's Senna, Prost at McLaren with the Honda engines, which are pretty good. And I'm thinking at this point, A, we've talked a little bit about this, but I love the fact that you have Senna on the rise and you have Piquet still playing well. Two amazing Brazilian talents at this point, which is just, I can't, it's kind of shocking when you think about it, that one country, so far from a continental perspective, removed from the birth of F1, have these amazing talents. But McLaren Honda dominated the season. They won 15 out of 16 races in 88. Prost finished first or second in every race other than his two retirements. He retired at Monza and Silverstone. Otherwise, he was always finishing on the podium and on the first two steps. He won seven races in total and outscored his new teammate Senna by 11 points, despite Senna winning one more race than him at eight. However, here we talked about this last week through the decades, or 2 weeks ago, only the 11 best results from the season counted towards the championship. And so Senna had a better 11 than Prost's 11, and it gave Senna the title by 3 points in 1988. That
It's
is bizarre. It's still bizarre. We talked
nuts,
about it
isn't
2 weeks
it?
ago. It's still nuts.
It is, and that just kind of, well, there's always going to be tension at a team, you would have thought, when you've got two absolute worldly talents like that. I mean, let's just be fair, right? McLaren completely broke fantasy F1 rules that year. They basically had the
They
best
did.
team with the best engine with the two best drivers, and everyone's looking around going, "How did they afford that with the budget?"
Exactly. You got $100. How'd they have extra money?
Yeah, and you've got some sort of not animosity, because I guess they all know the rules under which things are run under, but it's got to have irked Prost a little bit that technically he's had a better season, but because of a stupid rule about how many results you actually count, he doesn't walk away with the title that year. So
After he asked for
89,
this guy to be his partner.
yes, after he has to bring him in, which is kind of bizarre, but there we are. Yeah, do you want to take us into 89 as
Sure.
things kind of sour a little bit?
Yeah, of course. And we saw this one coming, right? This has been the theme of the thing, you know. So Prost loses out to Senna, even though, as you said, he thought he did better. You knew what was coming next, and it starts. The struggle between Prost and Senna for the number one driver's seat there put him on a bit of a collision course in 89. Mutual admiration turned out to a little bit of hatred, and then Prost accused Senna of dangerous driving. And here's where it gets good again. Receiving more than his fair share of attention from McLaren and Honda. Excuse me. So at this point, he's now saying, well, they're paying more attention to him. Just like he was saying before about Renault and their favoritism for Arnoux and the media. And so the animosity comes big in round two only. Second race, San Marino, or Imola, as I like to think of it. They had another agreement, which is kind of like we talked about before, and this one's highlighted in the video too. Whoever won the start would not be challenged by the other in the first like lap or so. And so Tosa being the first turn. Prost kept the agreement after Senna won the first start. Okay, so the professor is like, all right, he beat me, I'll lay back. However, there was a restart. Gerhard Berger, and it's also highlighted there, had a monstrous crash in his Ferrari. Prost...
Yeah. Proper yeah. Fireball as well. I forgot about it. I mean, seeing it, I'd actually it brought it back. I remember watching that and thinking, oh my gosh, he's not getting out of there.
So then there's a restart, and Prost wins the restart and assumes the deal is still on, but Senna passes him under braking for the first corner, second corner in Tosa, and at this point, he was pissed. So Prost goes journalist. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, before you just go into the journalist, right, this is just brilliant because it's... It couldn't have happened any better when the rivalry was simmering to have something like this where both of them are going to take the moral high ground and believe they're right. So Senna claims there is only one first corner. That's when the lights go out at the start of the race. He made it to the corner first, therefore he is on the upside of the agreement. Prost says, well, we restarted the race, so we had to do a standing start all over again, and I beat you into the first corner, therefore I take the agreement. It's like... Red flags were not in their gentleman's agreement whatsoever. So both of them are 100% believing that they are correct. And that is never going to end well with two big egos like this.
No.
And you couldn't have written a better script if you wanted them to go head to head. But go on, carry on with how it gets even worse.
Well, it gets worse because Prost goes to a journalist, a friend of his, told him about this situation. And apparently, let's be honest, he probably told him to go public. But he said, I told him not to go public. And the journalist goes public with the story. And so then Senna says this is no such agreement, that it never happened. But then Marlboro's John Hogan, who was just there as a sponsor kind of representative, he's like, all right, I'm there. He said, no, I saw it. I saw the conversation happen. Okay, at this point, there's no repairing the relationship, right? I mean, you have now gone, he said, she said, in the press. You've brought the sponsors in, and of course the professor gets annoyed by this. He had the belief that Honda and Ron Dennis viewed Senna as the future, and let's be honest, he probably was. And so Prost recalled that at the Italian Grand Prix, he had one car with four or five mechanics around it, his, while Senna had two cars, at the very least, let's say one on the test car, the T car, whatever, but 20 people, or 10 to 20 people. He's like, you're not even working on my car anymore over here.
I'd love to be able to, I didn't have enough time to fact check this to go in and take a look at this, but could you imagine sitting there in your car with like three or four people begrudgingly working on your car, probably going slowly, and then looking over to your left and seeing an army of people doing anything they can to get Senna's car ready. And by the way, probably setting this T car up for Senna in case he needs to use it as well. I mean, maybe you reap what you sow, and his attitude had kind of made Senna had that kind of gravitas, I would say, that probably he was a lot nicer to work with, even if he was still an animal in terms of competitiveness. But
yeah. At the Italian Grand Prix, the best part of this is, apparently, again, this is all stories at this point, but Ron Dennis had said that the trophies that are won belong to the team and they like to display them. And so you will, you know, save the trophies and we will put them in the McLaren headquarters. And so Prost takes his driver's trophy from the race and drops it into the crowd. At this point, Ron Dennis is pissed and he's so incensed at Prost, he took the constructor's trophy and basically threw it at Prost's feet. And Prost felt so bad, apparently, this is, again, these may be rumors. He had a replica trophy made for Dennis, but it was never given to Ron Dennis. So at this point, add Ron Dennis to the list of people who don't like Prost. And then
if you really want the tinfoil hat thing, yeah. So now he's got more cars than me, he's got more people working on it than me. In 1989, as it carried on going, he carried on claiming that his Honda V10s were not producing the same amount of power as Senna's. I mean, he has properly gone all in, and hey, maybe he could be... true, but It got to the point where the Honda boss at the time, Osamu Goto, felt compelled to come out and speak to the British media on the matter to basically go, no, all engines are equal. But oh my gosh.
And then they close 89 just in fitting fashion with this chaos going on at the Japanese Grand Prix towards the end of the season, if not the last. I can't remember the order of the races then. And this is also in the video with the Senna Prost one. So they literally go up to the Cassio chicane and the cars get interlocked, the tires amongst the tires, and they run off into the escape road. Prost, thinking the world championship was over, climbs out of his stalled car. But as they separate the cars, they pushed Senna's McLaren a little bit backwards towards the track. And so as they push it forward to kind of get it out of the way of the track, they're on this escape road. Senna gets the engine started and drives through the chicane and keeps racing. And Senna's like, I'm out of here. And Prost is walking away, like, what is going on here? And they're in the same. Yeah. Go ahead.
I really wish on that video it could have got like panned in. You could have seen Senna kind of doing the loser symbol on his head as he drives away. Because Prost's face is kind of taken. He's got this confused look of like, what now? He's what?
So,
Now, you could say that in that little minute is kind of the microcosm of what summed up Senna. The race is never over until it's
ever.
over. Like he sat there and just thought, well, something might happen. And then when they bump started, he's like, okay, so long, suckers.
Oh, and Senna, I mean, famously has said, you know, you're a racer, if you're a racer, you always go for the gap that exists. That's the way he always thought, right? And so that'll come back in this relationship in a minute as well. Actually, fascinatingly, so Senna's car was damaged. The nose was damaged. He pitted. He rejoined behind Nannini, and he sliced past him at the chicane. However, they excluded Senna for missing the chicane when he went off with Prost. So he cut it because he went off the escape road when he got the bump start from the marshals accidentally. They appealed the decision, but it was upheld. Senna was given a fine. So Prost clinched his third driver's title that season because of that race, because of the way Senna was disqualified and all the things that happened. However, they could not go on as teammates anymore. So Prost and Senna don't get along. Prost and Dennis, Prost and Honda, Prost and McLaren. I mean, he's lighting the world on fire as he leaves each place. They say don't burn the bridges. Well, he blew them up with bombs. And so then in 1990, he joins Ferrari. Yeah.
Okay, so he joins Ferrari, but I found an interview with him as he left McLaren and joined Ferrari. And maybe I'll put the link in the show notes because there's lots of kind of ooh, what do they say burns that he puts out. But I read the one that it says Prost on Senna as he's kind of leaving him now. It's like I have a reason to pity Senna. He'll be very unhappy one day. The day he stops winning. The day he doesn't have the best equipment. Second place for him will be the worst day of all possible failures, and you'll have to feel sorry for him. If I'd wanted it that way, Senna would still be with Lotus. I brought him here. People would
I
be
brought
congratulating
him
me
here.
because of I'm an equal engine, and he'd be miles behind me. He's quicker than I am in certain circumstances, but he takes more risks. It's up to him now to weigh up if those risks are worthwhile or not. He reminds me of the Prost I was a few years ago, and I understand what life must have been like for Lauda alongside me. So it's kind of sticking the knife in, but then at the end kind of goes, but maybe just reminds me a little bit too much of me. So,
Yeah.
Anyway, I found it fascinating. There's a whole number of kind of like little kind of parting jibes and looking forward to Ferrari. I'll put the link in the show notes because it's quite a nice little set of notes from that interview. So yes, he joins the Tifosi 1990, as you're saying, Brian.
Well, he joins in partners with Nigel Mansell. And, you know, they already had a
Buffon
little.
hairstyle and the moustache. I mean, it's like a hair. Facial hair and head hair, match made in heaven.
Amazing. And again, we get back into some of these controversies. So Prost had won the championship the year prior. We just talked about how at the Japanese Grand Prix with his race with Senna and the tanglement there in 89. So he's the lead driver. And Mansell recalls an incident. And now we're going to learn that I think every F1 driver has a little bit of the am I getting the short end of the stick here situation in their brain. Mansell is clearly not going to take the quote high road and ignore these things. So Mansell recalls an incident at the British Grand Prix in 1990 with his new teammate, Alain Prost, the reigning world champion, who's the number one in the team because of his world championship-ness. He didn't like the car, Mansell, that he drove the way it was handling. And he actually talked to the mechanics, and apparently Prost was having trouble with his car, liked how Mansell's was handling, and had them swap cars without telling Nigel Mansell so that Prost could get Mansell's car because he thought it was better. And Mansell found out after the fact that this had been done. A, if this is true, holy crap. And B, if this is true, I understand why Nigel Mansell started having a problem with Alain Prost halfway into the season.
Yeah, and then the one that the flash forward that you just meant referenced. So Senna had lost the title to Prost after that coming together, despite the fact he got going again and won the race. He got eliminated, and that handed it to Prost. Now the shoe is on the other foot as we arrive in the penultimate round of the season in Japan. Prost trailing Senna by 9 points, and Senna doesn't get a great start. I think this is the dirty side of the track reference potentially on the video, and Prost gets a better start. Senna comes flying up the inside, and this is his famous quote about why did you go for this gap, because it clearly wasn't there. And he said, as a racing driver, if you stop going for gaps that are there, then you're not a racing driver anymore. Although he did admit a year later that he did intentionally drive into Prost, because he came flying up the inside, steered to the left, took them both out. Title for Senna.
Prost finished the season 7 points behind Senna, like you said. And the interesting part, Prost says, he is a man without value. Damn! I mean, like, you can be annoyed with someone, but I mean, where are you going with these things? So the last couple, we'll kind of quickly hit the last few things here. In 91, Mansell left Ferrari because of his unstable relationship with Prost, so add him to the list of people who don't want to work with Alain Prost. He rejoins Williams, Mansell does. And then the replacement at Ferrari was Jean Alesi, and Prost won no races, only getting on the podium 5 times in 91. He took this out on the team and criticized the car and the team publicly. And then, of course, they terminated his contract before even the Australian Grand Prix was run, and he was done. He sat out 92. I would just say this, right? He's now pissed off Ferrari. Add that to all the other teams and engine suppliers in addition to people. He sat out 92. He will come back in 93, which will hit quickly. But 92 is when Nigel dominated in that Williams.
Yes.
One of the most dominating seasons ever. And I'm going to guess, I'll go out on a limb here, it wasn't just the Williams being amazing. It was also he didn't have a guy like Alain Prost right behind him, pushing him and making him make mistakes and taking some of those points. So anyway, the last thing is in 93, as I said, Prost joins Williams. Mansell heard about this and left. He goes, I don't want to work with this guy. I mean, Ferrari, you're bringing him in, I'm going out.
Well, exactly. If you want to get a feeling for how much he must have got under people's skin, Renault factory workers want to set fire to his car. Nigel Mansell has just had the most dominant season ever and said, who's my new my partner now? I'm going to America. I'm going to go and race in the kart series. I'm not going to be his teammate. Wow. And then there was rumors that Senna was going to come in, but this again is how much of a rift there is between the two of them. Prost had got a clause in his contract which prevented Senna from being hired. And I think Senna talks about it in one of those videos as well. He's kind of like disgusted by the whole thing, saying he's a coward. If he doesn't want to be for a teammate, he's a coward. So they bought Damon Hill in to go alongside him. But little start of that season, Mansell ups and outs because he can't stand him. And Prost is so anti-Senna that he's got a clause in his contract. I mean, oh, man. Genius on the track, but kind of sounds like you probably might not want to have him over for a dinner party.
Hell of a driver.
I think he'd be criticizing the appetizers.
Agreed. Hell of a driver. So in his last season as an F1 driver, 93, he wins his fourth world title. Fourth. And so, interestingly, at the end of the season, shortly before the Portuguese Grand Prix, Prost announced he would not defend his fourth title because that one-year clause in the contract that Rob mentioned was ending, and Senna would be able to join Williams for the upcoming season, and he didn't want to deal with that. So Prost takes his sandwich and toys and walks away and opts to retire. And interestingly, this is also in the video, which I read it and then I saw the video again. I didn't understand this in the video, and I'd seen it many times. I had seen it many times. I didn't understand it. On the podium at Adelaide in 93, Prost's last race, he didn't win, but he was the champion for the season. He and Senna, Prost and Senna embraced. And Prost was surprised by the gesture. And in the video, understanding this history now, and understanding that season, and understanding the retirement and the championship, but he didn't win the race, Senna did. Prost was surprised by the gesture, as Senna had, in a previous race, declined a handshake. Not only did he embrace him, he pulled him up to the top step of the podium and hugged him. And I'm just going on memory from the video.
He did,
and
yeah.
You saw that, and Prost, upon retiring, said, "The sport's given me a lot, but I decided the game wasn't worth it anymore." I loved that Senna did that. I love that. And so go watch that video, because now you know how much that gesture means. They talked a tiny bit about it.
To both of them as well.
Yes,
because I think Prost has kind of commented it in an interview since, that like once that rivalry is out of the way, and then no longer because Prost is retiring, then they're not going to be at each other anymore. There's that moment where they can both acknowledge each other for being the amazing competitors that they were. Like Prost could have easily, if he was like a super sort of resentful person, could have just refused to be pulled up onto the top podium. But I actually think this reflects well on both of them.
Agreed.
Absolutely fierce competitors on the track, absolutely fierce competitors off the track while they're both racing. But the moment Prost is retiring, they can have a moment like that. So no, I thought that was pretty cool. I put a lot of notes in on this next bit, but let's not drain this one. I know you got some stats that back it up later, but Alain Prost, one of the few people that kind of also then went on to kind of own his own race team. 1997, Prost bought the Ligier team from Flavio Briatore and renamed it Prost Grand Prix. I would do that as well. If I bought my own team, I'm not going to go and call it kind of kick Sauber. Blah,
you wouldn't
blah, blah,
take
blah.
Sponsor money? Yeah, you would.
It's just, well, I would, but it's just going to be, you can give me all the sponsor money you like. I'll put all your big logos over my car and all of my social media and everything, but the team is Vail Racing. It's just going to be my name. But anyway, so Prost did that. He signed up with Peugeot, keeping it French for the engines, and Shinji Nakano signed Olivier Panis. And they actually looked pretty good to start with. Did all right, picked up some points, but really then there's a whole bunch of notes here how it was just a slow, gradual decline, and until Peugeot engines didn't keep up to snuff. They were heavy. They really weren't any good. They swapped to Ferrari engines in 2001, but the money ran out at the beginning of 2002, and boom, Prost F1 was out of business, leaving a trail of around $30 million in debt. So, yeah, didn't really have the same impact on the constructors' title as he did driving and winning four drivers' titles. So, but yeah, you found this little the six former world champions.
Exactly. So there have been other drivers who had teams. There have been, you know, sponsors. The story that Laura gave us about Andrea Moda, the shoe company. I mean, you'll see a lot of different things happening. But there were six former F1 world champions who hung out a shingle and started their own team. Whether they purchased it or how they started it, whatever. Prost, we just talked about, 97 to 01. At the same time, Stewart Grand Prix, 97 to 99. It was the halcyon days of former champions doing this. Fittipaldi Automotive, 75 to 82. Embassy Racing with Graham Hill, 73 to 75. Surtees, after John Surtees Racing Organization, 1970 to 78. And then the one that always kind of tickles me, because I think it had the most success, and we've talked about him as a driver, but also the team at times, Brabham. So Brabham Motor Racing Developments Limited, 62 to 92, 30 years the Brabham team existed, which is great. And then it begs the question, bum, 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 will Andretti be the next one? Will he be the seventh former world champion to have a team? We shall find out.
All right. I'm going to let you hit this note, because this is just... When Brian goes down the rabbit hole, boy, all the rabbits down there want to be scared and just run for their lives.
Yeah, all right. This is... So you might ask, Rob and Brian, has Alain Prost been in a French F1 driver love triangle? Well, of course, the answer is yes. So before there was Alain Prost, there was Jacques Lafitte and René Arnoux. We've already talked about the sour relationship with Arnoux. Well, let's talk a little bit about the other one. So of the winningest F1 drivers from France of all time, Alain has 51 wins. That's a lot. We'll talk more about that in the SAP stats. René Arnoux, who he pissed off at Renault, has 7, and Jacques Lafitte has 6. Okay, so now you got the big three of French F1 driving, okay? We already know Prost and Renault don't get along. What about Jacques Lafitte? Jacques and Alain appeared to be buddies. We have pictures, photos of them playing tennis, hanging out. In 1977, Jacques Lafitte married Bernadette Cottin, Cottin, if you guys want to do some Googling, because I'm not going to get into everything here. Had a couple kids. Lafitte broke a couple legs, and then they got divorced in 92. And then all of a sudden, Alain and Bernadette were together. But Alain and Anne Marie, his main wife, remained married till 2017. But Alain and Bernadette, his side piece, started living together and had a child named Victoria in 96? Question? What's happening here? I don't know. I'm just going to leave it at that, okay? I'm not
Brian
going to go any
overboard, Brian
further.
overboard.
Yeah, I'm not going to go any further, but I mean, this would be effectively, yeah, anyway, I'm not, we'll leave it at that. Just, was there a French F1 driver love triangle? Oh, oui.
Right, okay. We're going to get back on track and head firmly towards Sap Stats. So just a little piece about what he's been doing since finishing his career and then finishing the Prost F1 team adventure. 2017, he was a special advisor for Renault Formula One team. Since July 2019, he's got a non-executive director role with Renault. And he's basically continued his role within Renault Formula One team into through the Alpine until January 22 when he finally left. And in terms of kind of awards that he's picked up, I'm not even sure what these are, but in 1986, Prost was awarded the Légion d'honneur by the French president Françoise Mitterrand, and then he's promoted from chevalier to officer. Whew. We go for that in 93. He got an honorary British OB in 1994 and the
Why?
Brazilian Order of the Southern Cross in 1999.
I don't
And he was also inducted into the International Motorsports Hall of Fame and the FIA Hall of Fame in 1999 and 2017, respectively. So, pretty sure that drivers probably don't care about those bits and pieces that happen. I'm sure it's a nice thing to happen to them, but I bet it's the wins and the dry, world championship trophies that probably take the most pride of place on the mantle. So,
Totally.
I
And
think
let's
it's
talk
time for you
about
to
some of those
pick.
wins. Yeah.
Well, I think it's time for you to pick which jingle you're going to lead us in for the Stat Prost edition.
Well, I think it's the first Sap Stats of the year, so we better start with Slap House. Sap Stats, Alain Prost, Veil's Tales edition. Four-time world champion. Four times. You can't deny the greatness of a four-time world champion. There are two seven-time world champions, Lewis Hamilton and Michael Schumacher. There's one with five, Fangio. And then it's just Seb and Prost with four. That's it. Those five are at the top of the win column for the F Drivers' Championships. That's your Mount Rushmore right there. Michael Schumacher broke Prost's record of 51 Grand Prix wins during his 2001 season, but I'm going to come back where that stands at all time. Prost shares the record for starting every race of a season from the front row. Which he did in 1992, sorry, 93. Nigel had done this in 92 with the season Alain was out. We already talked about that. Senna did it in 89 and Damon Hill in 96. In 1993, just to be clear about this, he started every race from the front row, all 16 of them. Holy cow!
Not even
And
something that Verstappen did
no,
last couple of years, so.
crazy. And so, in terms of total wins, I referenced his 51, which Michael Schumacher broke. Lewis has 103. Michael has 91. Max is 54. Seb is 53. And Alain is 51. He is that good because they had less races back then, too, per season. So the fact that he's fifth all time in world championships, fifth all the time in wins, he also, in addition to having four championships, has four second places in the World Drivers' Championship. Holy cow! So after that inaugural season 80 with McLaren, the non-Ron Dennis era, when he kept blaming them for the crashes and he thought they blamed him for the crashes and blah, 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 he never finished worse than fifth. He ran 199 Grands Prix. He had 51 wins, 33 poles, 41 fastest laps, 106 podiums. That puts him fourth all time in terms of podiums. I don't know how many ways to cut these stats, and he's one of the top five no matter what, every time. Fourth all time in podiums. If you look at podiums overall, Lewis 197, Michael 155, Seb 122, and Alain Prost 106. He is, however, tied with Fernando for 106.
Ooh.
So Fernando can get ahead of him next time he steps on the podium there. He led 2,683 laps which is 7,753 miles. 7,753 miles of leading a race. Not just racing, but leading a race. He could have driven from my deceased aunt's house in L.A., because I like to do L.A. to New York, to my cousin's house in Long Island, which is 42 hours if you're following the speed limit, but Alan would not have done that. That's 2,800 miles. He could have then turned back across the country because he left his curling iron on, and so he could have made it all the way back to L.A., and then he would have had so many miles left leading a race. He's like, you know, I'm going to drive to Destin, Florida, and basically make it there. He could have crossed the country three times leading a race. And the final stat I have is one that I always enjoy kind of checking out. His average starting position was 4.16, so a little over fourth was his average start in his career. His average finishing position was 2.96, which is a humongous difference in terms of the way he ran the race and what he did during the race to move up to that point.
So what over his career, if we go back to my quality to race day swingometer, he did basically a plus one on the swingometer.
Yes, which is why when I saw this, I said this is Vail's thing from the end of the year when we did the recap. So that's why I put it in there.
Quality to race swingometer. Come on, we've got to make this a thing. It's and Alan, of course, his entire career has got a plus one. Well, plus 1.2.
Whew. Yeah, what a guy! What a Vail's tale, Rob. Thanks for doing this with me. But I learned so much about Alan Prost. And again, I don't think people would say he's a bad guy. I think he's just an intense driver, and he wants things in his favor, and he's willing to piss people off to win. I don't know if I've ever heard anyone say he's a jerk. It's just that's who he is in a race car and around the racing track. A jerk.
Yeah, it seems like everything possible to win sprinkled in with a little bit of paranoia and tinfoil hattedness that when you're not winning. And there is, again, going back to one of the videos you put in there, there's a quote from Senna where he's saying that it's never Prost's fault. Whenever you hear Prost coming out and talking about something, it's the car that let him down, the team that let him down, the weather let him down, and he reels off all these things. He said, but it's never his fault. And that is maybe the one thing that you kind of, again, we haven't looked at every single interview he ever did, and maybe sometimes he was magnanimous in defeat, but I think it comes across that maybe he was a bit like that, I'm the best, I'm going to win. If I don't win, it probably isn't my fault.
And then, but then as a, you know, sort of, whatever you would call his, we already called it, I can't remember his role, a senior ambassador or whatever for Renault/Alpine, he seemed like, you know, a much different person, the same way Niki Lauda would work with Mercedes.
Yeah.
You know, much more, he could be himself, if you will, and no one ever accused him of being anything other than amazing at that point. So it's like you said, whatever it took to win, he would do it, and he was paranoid about it, and he wanted every advantage. And you know what? Good for him. Because I'm good with that.
Like, I obviously never made it to the top levels of sport, but in football, we would always kind of have this, you know, what goes on pitch stays on pitch. You can be an absolute worst enemy with the person you're playing against for those 90 minutes, but you could always have a pint in the bar afterwards and laugh about it.
Yeah.
And that kind of sentiment of being like a true competitor when you're out there, but able to then be not too much of a douche when you're off it. I'd like to think Prost was like that. It seems to have been, it wasn't until he retired that he could be a nice guy.
Agreed.
To people. But so what? If that's what needs to be one of the number one drivers in the world, then it looks like it worked out pretty well for him. So no, thank you for picking this one, Brian. It was it had been suggested, I think, on the Discord maybe that Prost should be somebody we should look into. And we'd kind of debate it and said, should we do Senna before we do Prost? And as much as I would love to do a Senna one, because there's just so much airtime devoted to Senna, I'm glad we picked Prost, and I'm glad we kind of got to kind of jump in and understand the big Buffon-haired legend.
The professor.
Yeah. So that's that. That's the Vail's Tales done. I felt like you should have got the fire going at the beginning like you used on the Vail's Tales episode, and then we could have put the fire out at the end. But
I should have.
I'll wrap that up.
Well, I play it now, but it'll make me have to pee. But I found it. It's too late.
Oh, no, don't play. I don't want you having to worry about having to pee.
Yeah.
No idea what we're doing next week, but we are getting closer to at least car reveals.
Yeah.
And maybe McLaren jumping out will force somebody else's hand this week and we'll have another car to look at. But maybe not. Maybe McLaren had just gone out there nice and early to get all the airtime, because we're so starved of F1 content at the moment. It probably was a genius play to put your new livery out there, because literally that's all the whole internet has been this week if you're into F1.
Totally.
So,
well,
cool.
That was a lot of fun. I hope you guys enjoyed learning about the professor, as Rob and I did as well. As Rob said, we'll have something fun next week, and so we will talk to you all in a week's time. Be well, be safe, have fun, everybody.